Dad, you know how you were saying I need to do more, be more, the whole fast fiber thing?
Yes.
Anyways, I saw that Vox is offering free standard installation and activation to the value of 3,000 rand.
That is a good deal.
With the money you save, I can buy some new skins for Fortnite. Talk about money in the bank.
With free activation to the value of 3,000 rand. Live smart. Hack life. Level up with Vox Fiber. Visit vox.co.za. T's and C's apply.
I'm Richard Herberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 253 for the week starting 3 March 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. WhatsApp the show 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, Vodacom fumbles the ball.
Also on the show, another streaming service launched in South Africa, Blue Label's Tough Week, and Energizer's insane 18,000 milliamp hour battery phone.
It's crazy. It's Sunday afternoon, it's 1 p.m. We're live streaming at live.techcentral.co.za, and it's time to talk everything tech.
Oh, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
I think we said on last week's show that we wouldn't be recording this weekend because you were going to be away in Debs, but you've postponed your plans, so I'm very pleased to say we're having a podcast today.
No, I just pushed it around.
But you're away next week now.
Yeah.
So we'll be back with the show again in 2 weeks' time, but it's good to chat to you. It's a bit warm today, but... We shall persevere. I'm just saying before the show, I'm really sweltering in my home studio here. It's probably about 35 degrees outside. Would you say just on your side of Joburg, it's quite pleasant?
Yeah, there's a little breeze coming through. It's not too bad. Mm. Look, I also don't have a built-in soundproof studio. That could also be part of your heat.
Yeah, I've got
you've got an aircon in there, so you should be sorted, right?
Yeah, I haven't switched it on though. I should have. Wasn't thinking. Background noise. See, I'm thinking of the listeners. We don't want any background noise on the show. The hardy dars are bad enough.
True that every morning.
Yeah, for sure. But there's a lot to talk about this week. Of course, Mobile World Congress has just wrapped up in Barcelona, and we'll be touching on a little bit of the news coming out of there. But before we get into all of that, let's do our quiz.
The first question: which JSE tech stock slumped 25% in one day this week after posting disappointing financial results?
And CLC CEO Jose Dos Santos has stepped down after 5 years in the role. Who has replaced him in an interim capacity?
Third question. ICASA took MultiChoice to task this week for proceeding with its listing despite a complaint against the listing by which non-profit entity?
And SpaceX launched an unmanned Crew Dragon craft from Florida to the International Space Station early on Saturday. Did you watch this, Rafat?
I didn't watch it live. I saw it after the fact. That little Earth globe that they put in the seat was pretty cool.
Oh, that was quite cool. And all the SpaceX employees waving that little mascot around as well.
Yeah, cool.
But it was seen as a milestone for Elon Musk's goal of enabling humans to live on other planets. Now, on board was a dummy astronaut. What was the name of the dummy astronaut?
Very cool. And the final question. Liquid Telecom said this week it has signed the first roaming client for its new wholesale 4G LTE network. Who is the client?
As always, the answer's at the end of the show, but let's dive right into this week's news. And, of course, we've just concluded Mobile World Congress, and there were some big announcements. I think the product of the show had to have been the Mate X from Huawei, which looked very impressive. It's going to be coming to South Africa probably around the middle of this year. This is Huawei's foldable phone, and I must say I'm very impressed with it. I think it's blown Samsung's one, which was announced just a week earlier, out of the water.
Oh, yeah. Look, Huawei is certainly now a brand you don't mess with. I think they're going to show up everybody with new tech in the coming seasons, yeah. I think.
It's
interesting to see.
I mean, I've expressed some skepticism about folding phones in previous podcasts, I think as recently as last week's show. But the Mate X, when I saw this thing, I thought, actually, maybe they're onto something.
Mm. Look, I mean, there's a few factors here. The size, obviously. They got it. Samsung's was still a bit chunky. It looked like a first-gen, yet-to-be-released product, where this one looked like something you'd want to pick up today
and
use. Also, the way it folds outwards, not inwards, like the Samsung. So the Samsung, and I think that also may be a slight difference in why they managed to get such a nice phone and why it works so well, because you want to use those screens, right, when you fold it.
Yeah. I still won't buy a first-generation one, and not just because they're insanely expensive, but I'm worried about the repeated fold and what impact that's going to have on the screen, and does it start to cause problems after a while. And I think, as with all consumer tech, it's going to take a couple of generations for them to perfect it. But out the blocks, out of the starting blocks, it's looking pretty good, although they were both the Samsung and the Huawei folding phones were hidden behind glass at Mobile World Congress, and no one could actually touch them. I wonder why they did that. But it looks impressive. If it doesn't break within the first few weeks of using it, I'm sure they're going to sell a lot of them, even at that high price point.
Oh, yeah, there's always somebody for that.
Yeah.
But there's actually been a few YouTube videos out, and one in particular from the guys at Pocket Now, well worth checking out, where they actually have a hands-on, I don't know how they managed to do it, but they've got some proper hands-on time with the Mate X, and they show some nice close-up video of it. And it looks like they did their homework, and this thing is working well.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, obviously you can argue the durability of that fold. But, you know, they've got testing machines these days that put those things through 200,000 tests. So they would know kind of to some degree how long that thing will last.
Mm.
And, yeah, I would put my money behind Huawei's if I look at the two compared to Samsung's, without a doubt.
Yeah, but just to if any listeners haven't heard the price of these things, the Samsung one is going to retail for $1,980 US. So at the bare minimum, we're looking about 35,000 Rand, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then the Huawei one is going to retail for $2,700. Probably close to 50 grand, if not slightly over 50 grand for a phone. We were complaining about the price of the new iPhones. This just blows that out of the water.
Well, if you want the latest and greatest, you're going to have to cough up the money.
Yeah.
But imagine that gratification if you want to be the only person at the table unfolding one of these when you're checking your email.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, I don't want to be that guy, and I'm not going to lie to you, but I'm sure there's going to be people who want that.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll see them in this market. People will be buying them, even at that price point.
Look, contracts do make it a lot easier, and I'm sure the big operators are going to come out with some interesting contract packages, but obviously around the 1,500-2,000 Rand mark, I would imagine, if possible.
Yeah, for sure. But it's an interesting time in mobile phones. I mean, we were saying in a recent podcast that the smartphone market has become kind of samey. The phones all look the same now, these big square or rectangular slabs of screen. These devices really transform things and show that show where the innovation in the next level of innovation in the sector may be coming from. And it's interesting that it's being driven by the Android manufacturers and not by Apple.
Yeah, it is interesting. And again, we've seen a lot of good things from Huawei. And I mean, obviously, I bought my phone, so I chose to upgrade to that Mate 20. And I'm still surprised at how good that device is.
Yes.
And it's for the first time in a long time that I really feel like my phone has got a proper use in my life. I mean, I often tell people when I show people the phone when we talk about kind of phones and stuff. I mean, when you can start using the camera for production work and the screen just is on point all the time for anything from reading large documents to doing little basic edits on screen with whatever you want to do. I mean, it's so awesome to be able to use this thing instead of a PC, obviously with limited usage.
Yeah.
And it's the first time me as a consumer have had access to that thing in the shape of this Mate 20.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just obviously just one device, but I'm very happy with it. Very happy with where we are with technology.
Yeah. I was interested, just talking about Apple and Android, I was very interested to see that Steve Wozniak said in an interview with an American news network that he wants a foldable phone from Apple. He was almost pleading with Apple. I want one of these things. I think a lot of people pointed out on social media to him, well, why don't you just buy the Huawei? I suppose as the co-founder of Apple, he feels some allegiance to the company he co-founded.
I think even for Apple, it will be way too expensive and way too niche.
Yeah.
To be honest, I mean, the only reason why these guys are getting it right is because, you know, they largely the manufacturers of their own technology.
Mm.
Apple, I mean, they have people that do it for them, but they don't own their own factories, right? These guys do, Samsung's and the Huawei's.
Mm. So, yeah, it's interesting. What does Apple do in response to this? Do they do anything? Do they need to do anything? Do we need to see a foldable iPhone this year or next year?
I don't know. I think the iPad plays pretty strong. I think this is a this is trying to compete with a tablet market again, trying to give people the best of both worlds at least. You know, we've gone through the phablet stage and our phablets are standard.
Mm.
I can see this very much once that brand, that fold, works 100% all the time.
Yeah. So in the long term, do foldable phones kill the tablet market?
I think so. Why would you have a big bulk? I mean, tablets are fantastic for every reason but portability.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you have a big screen, if you can unfold a small thing to a big screen, problem solved. Perhaps there's some niches where tablets like the Pro, you might not want a foldable tech because you want a more solid, large screen, glass top type device. You know, I can imagine that would still remain in its top spot of for tablet users. But for everybody else, like when I mean, where do we use your phones? When you're sitting, reading, waiting for something in the morning, when you're catching up with the news in the evening, just before you go to bed, that's when you really want that large screen device.
Yeah.
It's just spoiling us with the tech, I think.
Yeah.
We don't need it, but it's such a nice to have.
Yeah, again, I certainly won't be buying one of these first-gen ones, but it's quite exciting to see where the potential is and where this is going, and you can be sure in 3 years' time that a product like the Mate X will be available in the conventional phone price category around the $1,000 level, probably.
I don't think the technology is that much more expensive. Well, will be that much more expensive in the future, obviously, when production increases. It's just a larger panel all panels these days can fold. It's just that layer on front of it that needs to be, have proper rigidity when it folds out 1,000 times.
Yes.
But I would love to have one of those in my hands right now just to kind of feel that bend, the click.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of the sign of a good device, right? Yeah. And that would be interesting to see.
And can you imagine the stares you're going to get at your local coffee shop as you unfold your phone?
Oh, yeah.
There's definitely some appeal there.
It's like, remember the old days of shaking the newspaper as you unfold it? You have that little shake just to get that crease out. You know? You need an app that can give you that same feeling in the morning when you open the Sunday Times.
So that's
the other part of this whole foldable phone thing, development support for it, because that's the other trick. How do apps fold and move and bend? So I was skeptical last year if all the developers were going to jump on board, but now with the amount of phones we've seen, I've got no doubt that most of the big players, including Facebook, Instagram, and those guys, are thinking of ways that they can make use of this in a very interesting way.
But that developer support is a good point. If you buy one of these things right now, you're almost certainly going to run into compatibility issues and apps that don't support it and that sort of thing. Now, I know that both Huawei and Samsung have done a lot of work in the software themselves, but I suppose we need to see native support for these foldable devices coming into Android in the next release.
Yeah, definitely. But kind of just, I don't know if you were thinking about talking about this particular product, but I'm almost more excited about the new HoloLens 2 technology.
Oh, that is so cool.
It's so much closer to, that ultimate idea of having a digital overlay to everything in your real world.
Mm. Yeah, those new HoloLenses look very cool. I'd love to get my hands on them. I wish they'd sell them here in South Africa. Interesting they announced that product at Mobile World Congress.
It's a portable thing now. It's completely free of wires from what I could see. So it's a mobile device.
Yeah.
And again, if you have anything on your mobile screen on your glasses, okay, this is still a bigger version, but eventually we'll get to the point where I can just put on my specs and that tech will be embedded in that lens.
Yes.
That's kind of the ultimate outcome to this.
Yeah. You'll buy your Ray-Bans powered by Microsoft HoloLens.
Exactly. Even the smartphone manufacturers will bring out, because essentially it's just an overlay. And you can see all these guys going to camera tech.
Mm.
Look at how clever these cameras are. I mean, not even talking about Nokia's weird array of cameras on that new phone. But that's almost going to negate for me as a spectacle user, spec user, wearer at least. It will negate the need for any foldable phone. I will just need something in my pocket. My glasses will display everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, we're heading there. The early attempts at that sort of eyewear wearable type stuff, it wasn't very successful. Google Glass was very sort of primitive.
And it was good for developers, but I think people got too excited about it and adopted it as like, oh, this is something we can actually use day to day, which obviously didn't work.
I think we still need the silicon to shrink some more and battery life to improve and that sort of thing before these things become really svelte and, you know, you really feel comfortable wearing these out and about. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to walk down the street wearing a pair of HoloLens.
No, of course not. But did you see, I mean, again, another bridge to that technology is our phones are just going to allow a lot more AR, obviously. We've seen that Google has now tested Google Maps in augmented reality. So you just hold up your phone and it shows you the real world with arrows over the image so that you know where to go. So we're gonna see the merger of those two. I mean, in a year or two, we're gonna be having this conversation, and they're gonna be so close. Probably, it's just which device do you choose for you? Something you hold in your hand or something you wear in your face?
Yeah, it's interesting times, and I thought this was the most exciting Mobile World Congress we've seen in quite a few years, actually, from the consumer electronics perspective. Some really cool stuff being announced.
Oh yeah, definitely. Getting back to a little bit of Huawei, but that MateBook of theirs also looks pretty impressive.
Oh, very good, very good.
I mean, I didn't expect this from them at all. I know they were in the PC market. Obviously, they make a lot of things, but that is a proper Mac competitor.
Yeah. Now, I've played with the previous generation. I haven't seen this new one that they've announced, but the previous generation, which is available in retail stores here in South Africa, and I've had a look at it, and it's an impressive piece of kit.
No, they're definitely angry to take on the tech market, that's for sure.
Yeah, big player in the PC market soon too, by the looks of it. But before we move on from Mobile World Congress, Rechot, something that actually caught both of our attention was this announcement by Energizer, the battery company, of a new... Do we call it a phone or do we call it a battery... Is it a battery bank. A battery bank that just happens to have a phone attached to it.
Well, the phone attached to it is not a bad phone. I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. I mean, with a 6.2-inch screen, 6 gigs RAM, 2 gig processor, it's not bad. But, yeah, we were all complaining about battery life on devices for the longest time, right? And now a company is giving us this incredible battery with a screen attached to it. And this is the result. I think it's a bit ridiculous in terms of the thickness. And we were just saying before the show, we needed something in between. I mean, this is pulling it a bit far, but imagine your current phone just 2 millimeters thicker.
Yeah.
Just to have that extra day battery. I mean, we don't need 5-day battery life. We need proper two and a half day battery life.
You're right. And I think the manufacturers are focused too much on making these things as thin as possible. And Apple's certainly to blame there. I think Samsung as well. When we've seen the battery life suffer, the iPhone has never had great battery life. Historically, the Samsung Galaxy series has also not had great battery life, although apparently the new S10 has got pretty decent battery life. But I think Huawei, again, has started to show the way with the Mate 20 Pro, which, in effect, if you don't use it heavily, has 2-day battery life. And if you use it very heavily, you're still going to get through a day with one charge, which is remarkable. I would actually prefer to have a slightly thicker phone if it means I can use the phone right through the day.
Yeah. I mean, imagine what other things I could make. I'd probably put a much better camera in there too, because I'm not going for the thinnest. So now all of a sudden you can have a slightly bigger sensor. You know, there's a lot of benefits with, I mean, obviously we don't design them, I'm sure there's going to be other flaws, but it's certainly not about the thinnest anymore.
Although apparently the Energizer phone has a camera bump. Can you believe it?
So they couldn't read. Oh, yeah, I can see it on the image now. I didn't actually notice that. That is very. So that maybe it's just a bunch of pen lights in there. That's why they couldn't read the bump.
I think it's just triple A's or something.
Yeah, exactly. Rechargeable, mind you, rechargeable triple A's.
but it's a cool looking phone. I'd love to actually get it in my hands and feel how heavy it is and how practical it would be to own one. I think it's a bit overboard, to be honest.
It's for your millennial who wants to go hiking in the forest, because they're going to get lost probably and they need a way to get home. Right?
Well, I was thinking that actually that sort of, you know, if you travel in remote places, for example, where there's no electricity, and on this continent there are plenty of people who work in things like mining and agriculture and that sort of thing. You know, you might be working on a mine in the DRC. You don't know when you're going to have reliable access to electricity to charge your device. A device like this could make perfect sense because you know you're going to get 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days of battery life. And you don't need to worry about carrying extra battery banks around or worrying where you're going to charge your phone next, because your phone is just going to last. And I would imagine that in that sort of environment, in an environment where you're not sure about energy supply, and it's not only in mining, you could be going on a 5-day hike in the Drakensberg. I'm sure you're going to be lugging a bit of extra weight around with the size of the battery, but at least you know you've got a phone with you and people will be able to get hold of you through the duration of your 5-day trip.
Yeah, somebody like Garmin should attach themselves to something like this and just get their devices to obviously outlast. But so this device does 90 hours on for talk time and offers 50 days of standby time. And if you play music, it'll give you about 100 hours. So, yes, it'll address those needs 100% in remote areas. You just need your battery to last for X amount of time.
Yeah. And of course, there is a weight trade-off, obviously. Have you got the specs in front of you there? How much does it weigh?
I was just looking at I can't find the weight. I was looking at something. Yeah, it's not giving the weight. Yeah, okay. Maybe they didn't give it. I'll see if I can find another one.
I mean, 18,000 milliamp hours. I'm imagining this phone weighs at least 400 grams.
Oh yeah, I mean that is. I've got a 10,000 milliamp hour battery bank, and that thing you can feel it when you're carrying it around. It's not the lightest device.
Yes.
Just on the battery bank kind of topic, I've been noticing that my battery banks don't charge a lot of the new phones. There's definitely something different, and this is a proper powerful battery bank.
Interesting.
Every now and then I get a phone that I'm playing with, it just doesn't charge these new devices.
Interesting. I wonder if it's something to do with USB-C.
It could be. My OnePlus 5, for example, didn't charge. It couldn't be charged with, and it's got a 2 amp out, so it's got a higher amp.
Yeah.
Amp output.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate the, speaking of new tech, the fact that these phone companies are ditching the 3.5 millimeter audio jack is really driving me nuts. I'm very glad to see that it's still there in the new Galaxy S10. I think Samsung is the only major manufacturer that hasn't ditched it, and kudos to them. But I've got these dongles for everything. For my iPad, I've got a dongle. For my and for my Huawei, I've got a dongle. Now I got a dongle came in the box with my Huawei phone, and I thought, okay, well that's fine. I can just use this dongle when I want to listen to music on my iPad. No, I plugged it into my headphones and plugged it into my iPad, and it popped up a warning on the screen saying you're not using a compatible USB-C. Adapter, and if, true enough, the music wouldn't play at full volume. It was very quiet. So what did I do? I trudged off to the iStore, paid a huge amount for the official Apple adapter, plugged it into my iPad, and my headphones worked fine.
I mean, let's be honest. The tech, if it connects and it works, it's software that's manipulating it. It's, there's no other reason. It's not that if they made it open for everybody to share that beautiful port, You wouldn't have this problem. But it's all about the accessories, right?
It's about the accessories, and that's what this was all about since the beginning. And Apple's not only to blame. I plugged the official Apple dongle into my headphones, and then I plugged that into my Huawei phone, and the Huawei phone popped up an error message saying you're not using an official compatible adapter, and the quality of your music playback is not going to be good enough. What are these companies doing?
Well, I mean, they're owning their ecosystem, right? They're just following Apple's lead.
Yeah.
That's how you make money. That's how you become a $1 trillion company.
But it's anti-consumer. I mean, you know, sure, okay. Maybe there's a case to be made. I don't buy it, but maybe there's a case to be made for ditching the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack if you want to make these phones ultra thin. But at least make sure that the technology and the adapters are compatible with each other.
Yeah, exactly. Don't exploit the customer just because you want to make 200 rand extra on a charging cable.
Mm, exactly.
I mean, we'd certainly be buying. I mean, I love buying accessories, original branded accessories for my stuff. You know, I love buying it. It's like nice little upgrades every now and then. But what these companies are doing is they're making it too expensive for you to do it to buy and enjoy those accessories. So now I'm thinking twice about buying an original accessory. And if it's too expensive, I'll just buy another brand.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, unfortunately, they've latched onto that. Now they're penalizing you. So if you buy a generic off-brand adapter, will it work? Probably not.
Probably not, yeah. And at the iStore, I had to pay 200 rand for this little piece of plastic to listen to.
What does
it
cost to make? Can't be more than a few cents.
A few
really.
Cents, probably, yeah. Maybe a few rand at worst. So the margin on this must be insane. That's why they did it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact that they don't even bundle these things properly with a lot of these devices, I believe the new iPhones don't all come with adapters, do they?
No, they don't. My iPad didn't come with an adapter, so I had to go and buy one. My Huawei came with an adapter in the box. Kudos to
them. Yeah.
But no, Apple's not going to include the adapter. You have to go buy that separately. How do you think they're going to skim the cream off the top? As if the device itself wasn't expensive enough.
Oh, that's what we love and hate about this beautiful tech industry, right?
Oh, it's going to come back and bite them at some point. I hope it does.
Definitely. Look, I mean, we things can't go on like this forever. I mean, there's so many players. I mean, consumers are obviously, you know, drifting towards a few of the big players.
Yeah.
And we'll see a lot of movement. I mean, I'm sure there'll come a time when somebody, there's a company bigger than Apple with, you know, a new nanotechnology smartphone to embed in your ear or something.
While we're picking on companies, let's move on to our next topic, and we're going to have a pick on Vodacom. What a shambles. What a PR disaster this week. So Andrew Fraser, who's a good friend of the show, who's been on the show a number of times in the past, picked up, I'm not sure where he found it exactly, but he found a webpage on Vodacom's website, which outlined their plans ahead of this week's introduction of ICASA's data expiry regulations. That said, that clearly set out that Vodacom was planning to charge you if you wanted data rollover on your bundle. Now, this is clearly very much against the spirit of the ICASA regulations, which didn't explicitly state that companies should offer this for free. But Vodacom went ahead and said, okay, there's going to be, you're going to pay for data rollover, up to, I think it was 49 Rand to roll over a 1 gig bundle. Not only that, you had to do the rollover, you could only do the rollover within 3 days of the bundle expiry. This headline 1 gigabyte bundle on Vodacom is still 149 Rand. So you've already spent that. And then they wanted to charge you another 49 Rand to roll it over for a period of no more than 7 days.
What's the use of that, right?
I mean, yeah, exactly. And so Andrew picked this up and, he started tweeting about it, and Tech Central picked it up, and I think Business Insider as well. We both wrote stories about it, within an hour or two of the story appearing on Business Insider and on Tech Central, Vodacom pulled that web page off its website, and it then issued a short statement saying we are reviewing the fees. Meanwhile, there's a huge storm going on Twitter, a sort of PR thing that no major company wants to see. Anyway, the long and short of it is that they partially backed down by the end of the week, announcing that there would be no fee for data rollover. However, they still haven't said what the data rollover period will be, so one assumes that it's still going to be the piddling 7 days, whereas the other operators, I think, on average are offering about a month. I think in some instances, Telkom's offering up to 6 months of rollover for free. But not only that, but then they announced that they were going to hike their prices from the 1st of April. So not for data rollover, but the actual, you know, package prices on some of their contracts would be going up. So in other words, they were saying to the market, well, you know, okay, you can have your free data rollover for a limited period of time, but we have to make the money back somewhere else, so we're going to hike up prices.
We're still paying for it.
Not only that, it's still going to charge for data transfer to other users. If it's 50 megs or less, they won't charge, but above that, they'll charge up to 20 Rand to transfer a gig of data from your account to someone else's account on the Vodacom network. All the other operators offered data transfer for free. I'm on Telkom, as you know, and I can transfer a gigabyte at a time, and there's no limit to the number of times I can do it. And in fact, I've been doing it because I've got a separate phone that I use for when I'm out running. And I listen to Spotify when I'm out running based on my own freemi bundle that I get every month. And there's no issue with transferring multiple gigs. You can only do it in 1 gig increments, but that's fine. You can just top it up when you need to, which works well. So MTN, Cell C, Vodacom, sorry, MTN, Cell C, and Telkom all offering free data transfer, but Vodacom charging for it. I think they really just fell flat on their faces over this one. They really fumbled it, and while they have backtracked to some extent, it's still not consumer friendly.
No, no, it's not. Well, we certainly know that these companies are fighting to the death over this very, very important commodity. That's soon going to become more than everything, you know. Data is really the thing that they need to secure to plan their future business, because this really is what everybody wants, data on their phone, because we consume so much for everything we do.
Yeah.
But I think they're missing a key. We'll all use more data if it's just friendlier for us to use and we don't feel like we are getting screwed over, right?
In many respects, Vodacom has become the new Telkom. You remember in the bad old days when Telkom was a monopoly and in the early days of ADSL, the prices were insane. I think when they launched ADSL, you had 3 gigabytes of data a month, after which they hard capped you and you had no option to top up.
Good old days.
I mean, can you imagine? And for that privilege, they were charging 680 rand a month. I think it was a 512 kilobit per second ADSL connection.
Oh, yeah.
Offering three gigabytes a month for 680 rand a month. That was the original ADSL. And a lot of people signed up for it, me included, because there was nothing else.
The best of what we could have, yeah.
But, you know, you still get the impression that Vodacom has kind of become like the new Telkom, and that they, you know, they treat data as this precious commodity that has to be measured out in small servings and sold at high prices to customers. That's not the right model anymore. The model should be uncapped, and I agree in mobile, uncapped is difficult, and if you're a big operator with limited spectrum, you can't really do that, but... you know, I think this model of charging high prices for relatively small bundles is over. And I think Telkom is leading the way in this regard. And sure, again, fair enough, Telkom has fewer customers on its network. I think it has access to more spectrum, although it doesn't have 900 megahertz spectrum. But it's showing a much more consumer-friendly approach about it. You get a large data bundle. It's data-led at a reasonable price. And I think Vodacom is going to lose customers as a result of this playing hardball and this anti-consumer approach, and they deserve to. I think consumers need to vote with their feet and go to operators that are that don't penalise them so severely and have more consumer-friendly policies when it comes to things like these ICASA regulations.
Oh yeah, and I mean consumers certainly have a lot of choice now. Only downside is if you're locked into a contract, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, try and avoid that if you can. I think that's a message. Yeah. It's been the case for a long time now. Don't lock yourself into a contract unless you can help it. But then people see these beautiful, shiny new Huawei's and Apples, and they say, oh, man, that's so good, but I can't pay cash for it. Ah, it's just, you know, it's only 1,000 rand a month on contract, and you sign up for 24 months, and that's how they get you.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, if you know what you're getting into, and I'm still happy that I did it with this phone.
As long as you know what you're getting into, and
exactly. And, but I'm happy with my operator. So yeah. You know, I know I was going to be with them for the next 2 years. I didn't really have I didn't want it to change.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, name them. You're welcome to name them.
Well, MTN. I mean, yeah. I've been with them since '99 or '98 or something. So, yes. You know, it's and I'm very happy with. Weren't they given some nice rating recently as well? That they are a very good operator somewhere.
Their network is very good. They're kind of I think they're in a neck and neck race with Vodacom to claim to be the best network in South Africa. And I think there was a report from P3. Just a few days ago that they have overtaken Vodacom now, but they've invested a significant amount of money in their network.
Look, let's be honest, we don't want the best, we just want consistently good with no rip-off pricing.
Agreed. But interesting time is in. It's a tough mobile market. The mobile industry is mature. You know, data prices are falling, not the headline rate so much. But certainly the in-bundle rates are coming down slowly but surely, not so much at Vodacom. But prices are coming down. And, you know, I think companies that are seen to be doing good by the consumer are the ones that are going to win in this market.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, that's what we want, right? Just give us, look like you want to help us, because we're all struggling for our rands and cents.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all we can ask for. And I think, look, that once we get, the likes of 5G deployed in a few years' time, and we have this really hot short distance wireless infrastructure, these guys are going to suffer badly if they don't retain customer loyalty.
Mm.
This is definitely not going to help that brand.
Yeah. So, lots more to talk about. View, a new streaming service. Do you remember the launch of OnTap TV a few years ago?
Sure. Yeah, there's been so many come and gone, right?
Yeah. So OnTap TV was launched back in 2015, and they never really developed the platform after that. And since then, we've obviously seen the emergence of Netflix and Showmax and Amazon and others coming into this market. Celsius, Black, Vodacom's Video Play. I think MTN has brought and removed some products from the market in that time as well. And OnTap TV, it looked interesting, but they didn't seem to really develop it. Now, OnTap TV is launched by a Hong Kong-based telecommunications company called PCCW. They're a very big company in Asia. And I couldn't make the launch this past week, but they're back now with a product called View, which I take it is a replacement to OnTap TV. It's V-I-U. And they've signed content agreements, interestingly, with the SABC and ETV to show local soap operas and that sort of thing, which we know are hugely popular, combined with international content and all that sort of thing. I haven't had a proper look at View's offering. I think its premium option costs R69 a month, or I forget the daily figure. It might be R5 a day. I think it is R5 a day, or $69 a month.
R5 a day, R20 a week.
There we go. So, yeah, there we go. Another entrant into the market. This one's really trying to use local content as its go-to-market strategy. I don't know how successful that's going to be, given that local content is currently already available free to air, but I suppose this is archival content. Maybe there's a demand for that.
Yeah, look, I mean, it does give it a little bit of, you know, if you start building up a stock library of all these shows that people want to watch, they're not always available, you know, post-screening, I guess.
Yeah.
No, it could work. They've got a few originals I see, but nothing that jumps out at anything that I've seen. They're obviously kind of Netflix-style local productions. Seems to be a few Indian titles, Bollywood-style titles. Yeah, look, I'm certainly not a customer for this. They just don't seem to have any titles that jump out at me. It's always good to have more players.
Yeah, it's a very, very tough market there, and as we saw with Celsius results this week, it's also an expensive thing. So Celsius Black, which was revealed in their full year results to December 31, 2018, has invested over R1 billion in content for Black, that's with a B, not an M, over the last 2 years. There's no way they've made that money back.
I mean, I don't know. I think anybody who's playing in this industry now needs to seriously think about their business case and, you know, is this really the way to, is this really the business I want to get into? Because, you know, the big names, international companies are definitely going to sweep the floor because they've got those big licenses that we all want.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an expensive old business. And I think the only company in South Africa that's really got the potential to take on the Netflixes of this world is MultiChoice. And I think even Showmax is not as strong as Netflix from a content perspective. But they have the resources, they have the potential to invest in local content, local productions, which they're doing, to be seen as least as a strong competitor. But I, you know, there's a lot of these rats and mice that are launching that I think are really going to struggle. And there are plenty of them out there. It's not just the names we've mentioned. There are many others as well.
Yeah, look, I don't know what else to say on that. I'm happy with my subscription. There is always opportunity to subscribe to two or three services. So we know that the market is broad enough if the right titles are there. So, for example, should there be a super sport streaming channel, we know it'll be wildly popular because, you know, that's something you'll subscribe along with everything else.
Yes.
If a company launches straight from the US movies, for example, wow, that'll be a game changer and MultiChoice will shake in their boots. But there's definitely gap for these things.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to offer something like that, it's going to be very, very expensive and you're going to need deep pockets. And, you know, who's going to do that in South Africa?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're coming with US $1 billion...
I suppose if you're Netflix or whatever. Yeah, true.
That's
true.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And they don't need massive infrastructure, right?
No, they don't.
They just need CDNs. They just need server capacity to maybe cache some of the stuff locally.
Yeah, just put it in the Teraco data center and off you go.
Oh, yeah. Nice little data backup there.
But it looks like an interesting offering, and that local content might catch on. So we'll see how they do. They certainly didn't put the investment they needed to into the ONTAP TV offering. But looks like there's some more resourcing behind Vue. So I wish it every success.
Mm. Look, what we really need from these guys is to support local producers to produce content for these channels.
Yeah.
You need to stimulate the industry because you have to ask a lot of these startups how much money do they pay back to the industry, because streaming services are so cheap. You know, it's like streaming music. You know, the artists don't get a lot of royalties for this.
Yes.
Unless the production is sponsored by the company or by the broadcaster or by the streaming service.
Or it's something that they can sell into international markets, potentially. So the last item of news I wanted to touch on this week was the results from Blue Label Telecoms, and those are, of course, allied to the numbers from Cell C. Blue Label, of course, owns 45% of Cell C. Blue Label's share prices have been absolutely decimated since it did that Cell C deal, as investors really have taken fright at just how much money Cell C might need to keep operating, rolling out network and staying competitive in South Africa. The share price this week dipped below 4 rand a share. I think at one point it was sitting at around 25 rand a share, so it's really been hammered. And they put out results this week. On the day that the results were released, the share price fell by 25.5%. The day after, I think it fell by another 15% at its worst point and closed down about 12%. One wonders whether the Levy brothers who founded Blue Label are starting to regret making this investment in Cell C. But they were still talking up a solid game, saying they believe Cell C is on track to turn a profit in 2020, even though it reported a huge loss in the 2018 financial year. I think investors are worried. And the other worrying thing, of course, was that they've seen a decline in their revenue from prepaid telecoms top-up. Which has been their core bread and butter business for many years. They're branching out into prepaid electricity and ticketing and other sorts of things, but it is very concerning to see this decline in their core business, and one does wonder how much of that is as a result of companies like Vodacom looking to do more and more of those top-up services electronically themselves with customers rather than utilizing Blue Label, because they now see Blue Label as a competitor being invested in Cell C. So I think we're going to have to wait a year or two, perhaps three, to find out whether this Cell C deal was one of the biggest corporate mistakes in South Africa's history. But right now, investors are not giving the Blue Label management team the benefit of the doubt, and that share price has been absolutely battered. I think if you're a Blue Label shareholder, you're going to have to sit this one out or get out now. Although I think a lot of people are underwater now, but if you bought into Blue Label at 10, 15, 20 rand a share, you're not going to be very happy with its current performance. And so you need to make the call. Do you get out now looking at what's going on at Cell C? Do you believe the management story that this is a turnaround and that it's ultimately going to be successful? Or do you see Cell C as a bottomless money pit that that you're just going to have to keep throwing cash at? And if that's the case, do you get out? It's an interesting time, and we will only really know the answer to that question, I think, in about a year or two. And I think that's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week, Rechat, is Elon Musk for launching for launching the Crew Dragon craft successfully. What a great video! And of course, and landing back on the raft in what looked like very windy conditions. The first stage of the rocket, which is always amazing. I can watch that forever. I every time they do it, I am always amazed when they land that thing safely back on Earth.
I mean, isn't that the pinnacle of human engineering?
Yes,
because that has for the longest time been one of the most difficult things to do, to land a rocket back. It's not called rocket science for nothing, right?
Yeah, indeed.
But to land it back, I'm not talking about this one specifically. I'm talking about all the stuff that they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, it's incredible stuff. But this was a test flight for planned future manned missions, and I think they're sending up the first test flight with humans on board in a few months' time, if I'm not mistaken, which will be quite a thing to watch. SpaceX, of course, has perfected the art of live streaming these things and turning them into televised events.
Oh, yeah. It's so much fun to watch that. And they produce so much awesome data and telematics on screen.
It's, yeah, it's brilliant. Good stuff. And I just loved what Elon Musk named the dummy astronaut that went up on this launch this week. Yeah. But we'll give the answer to that in the quiz just now. So there we go. Elon Musk, our winner this week for that successful launch. And I think he's going to have an epic year with SpaceX. And our loser this week, for all the reasons that we've set out already, is Vodacom. Boo-hoo, Vodacom. You really need to be more friendly towards your customers. What's your pick this week, Rahat?
So I've been playing with a monitor for the first... Well, this is the first time I've actually played or tested a curved monitor, a proper curved monitor. So this is from a company called AOC. And this is a gaming monitor, 24-inch gaming monitor that retails for just under 5,000 Rand. And it comes with FreeSync enabled. Now, as you know, Duncan, FreeSync, or NVIDIA recently enabled with the, one of the driver updates, that FreeSync, you can use FreeSync, like the G-Sync technology, with their graphics cards, which traditionally was only locked to AMD graphics cards.
Oh, yeah.
So now we can all the gamers who have a FreeSync compatible monitor, or most monitors are compatible with the technology, you can get variable rate, or variable refresh rate for your games, which just gives you a much smoother gaming experience. But this, that technology aside, this curved screen is actually very nice, although I would have loved to have two of these side by side, just to create that kind of wrap around feeling. Now, 24 inches, it's a 1920 by 1080, so nothing too fantastic there. But from a gaming point of view, if you're sitting relatively close to your monitor, it's a very nice kind of immersive experience, and it's got good color saturation. So for about 4,800 Rand, I think it's a pretty decent buy if you're looking for a good gaming monitor.
Is it a 144 hertz refresh?
Yeah, 144. So all of the gaming monitors with FreeSync will be 144.
Oh, right.
It needs to, needs to be able to do the to ramp up to a decent frame rate.
Yeah,
at least.
Yeah. I've still to see one of these 144 kilohertz monitors running a game. I must pop through to Mustek or one of the computer retailers soon to have a look at what all the fuss is about.
Look, I mean, for day to day, it obviously won't mean much. But if you know a specific game and you've been playing it a lot, and you switch to adaptive sync or G sync or FreeSync, you'll notice a much smoother. Like, it feels like the game's been updated. It just feels like the game is a little bit smoother, more responsive. It's quite strange. I'm not saying every game works as well, but PUBG and Battlefield that I play, they work pretty well with that technology.
Okay,
it makes for a nice gaming experience.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the era of immersive large screen, perhaps curved screen, perhaps ultra wide screen 4K gaming at 144 hertz refresh and HDR enabled. That's going to be very cool. But I think the investment you need to make to get a system like that is very high still. But it won't be in a few years.
Yeah, exactly. But it depends on what you play, right? Not everything benefits from it. So. You know, if you're really into that sort of thing, yes, it'll benefit you if you invest. The benefit you get from the games will certainly be worth the investment if you've got some bucks. But starting with a FreeSync adaptive sync, I mean, those monitors compared to a G-Sync monitor isn't very expensive. So I mean, if I look at for example the Alienware G-Sync monitor versus the Alienware non-G-Sync FreeSync version, that's about the $4,000 difference.
Wow.
$5,000, depending on where you buy it. So, I mean, you can get a really good monitor with a great feature set.
Yeah.
A good price these days.
Right. So it's the AOC. What's the model?
The AOC C24G1 24-inch.
Why do they never come up with cool names for these things? I've mentioned it before, but these string of numbers, no one's ever going to remember them.
Yeah, exactly. The larger version is called the Aegon. Look, this one might be called the Aegon too, but I couldn't find the wording on there. But there's a larger version, a 31-inch version for just over 10,000 Rand. And I think that would be a nice one to go for. But you're looking at about double the budget. I might look at getting two of these as opposed to one big one. Because then you have like this weird curved dual screen setup. It could look very nice.
Yeah. Why don't you get two 31s?
Well, then that's three times the original budget. So...
Right.
Yeah.
My pick this week, and it kind of ties in with what we were talking about earlier, is a Showmax Original It's been out for about a month now, I think, but I finally got around to watching it, and that's The Girl from St. Agnes. It's set in, I think it's filmed in Ikopo in southern KZN, Ikopo, to pronounce it correctly. It's a kind of a murder. It is a murder mystery. Who done it? But it's quite well. It's quite well done, and I'm quite impressed by it for a local production. I think the acting is a little off in places occasionally, but that's not a major detraction from it. It's very slickly done, fun to watch. I think it's only 8 episodes, and they keep you guessing to the end who murdered this schoolgirl at this private school. There's a really creepy cast of characters, any of them really could have done it. And the show keeps you guessing right to the end who was responsible. I'm not going to drop any spoilers.
I like spoilers. Give us a hint. No, I'm just teasing.
It's a good show. I would go as far as to say that it's the best local Showmax production I've seen to date. In fact, I've only done 2, so not a huge amount to choose from. But I also did enjoy the Tali's Wedding Diary. That was very funny. but I think in terms of the slickness, this one just not cranks it up a notch. And it's a really good show. If you have Showmax and you haven't seen it yet, give it a watch. It's good to see great local productions being produced here in South Africa.
Yeah, we definitely need more of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So before we play out with our song pick, and it's my pick this week, let's do our quiz results. The first question, which JSE tech stock slumped 25% in one day this week after posting disappointing financial results? And that's Blue Label Telecoms.
Second question, Celsius CEO Jose Dos Santos has stepped down after 5 years in the role. Who has replaced him in an interim capacity? And the answer is Douglas Craigie Stevenson.
And ICASA took multi-choice to task this week for proceeding with its listing despite a complaint against the listing by which non-profit entity? And that entity's name is Kulisa Social Group.
The fourth question, SpaceX launched an unmanned Crew Dragon craft from Florida to the International Space Station early on Sunday, a milestone for Elon Musk's goal of enabling humans to live on other planets. On board was a dummy astronaut. What was the dummy astronaut called? And the answer is Ripley. And I'm sure everybody can guess where that's from.
Absolutely.
The Alien movies.
I do wonder whether she's going to come. What were those creatures called in the Aliens movies? Those ones that with the long noses that came out with their teeth dripping goo everywhere.
Weren't they called? Yeah, I just
know they had a name.
Alien, right?
They had a name.
Yeah. I was actually watching those movies again.
Me too.
They don't age. They just stay classic.
They are absolutely brilliant. So my favorite was the second one, Aliens. Mm. And then I think the third one they kind of lost the plot a bit, and then they came back strong with the fourth one. I never got into Prometheus. Did you watch Prometheus?
Yeah, I did enjoy all of them, especially in sequence. I must be honest, or at least watching them all in a series.
Yes, yeah.
I did enjoy them very much.
Okay, maybe I must give them another go. But I'm definitely those Aliens movies. I rewatch every 5-6 years or so, and I love them every time. They're so well done.
Mm. And they haven't, rewatchability is high.
They haven't dated at all. And the last question in the quiz this week, Liquid Telecom said this week it has signed the first roaming client for its new wholesale 4G LTE network. And the question was, who is the client? And it's MTN South Africa. And that's our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, the WhatsApp line to use is 071-999-1111. 071-999-1111. We love getting your feedback on that line. We don't take calls on that line, just WhatsApp messages, please. And we're playing out with one of my favorite artists this week. He is the frontman for British heavy metal band Iron Maiden, but he's also had a very successful solo career. His name is Bruce Dickinson, and there's rumors that he's bringing out a new solo album soon, which I'm really looking forward to. But this track is off his most recent album, the name of which I have forgotten.
the track's name or the album's name?
The album's name. Actually, let me just click through to the album if I can do that here. No, I can't. But it's a great song off his most recent album, which I think came out about 8 or 10 years ago now. So he's long overdue for a new one. But kind of keeping with the Elon Musk theme and the Ripley theme, this song is about mankind's ventures into the solar system and then into the broader galaxy. And what the future might hold for humanity. It's called Navigate the Seas of the Sun. Until next time, from Rechel and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
Through the frozen wastes of time.